Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 18th day of January, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call. And when it comes to summarizing a week like the one we've just had, I'm going to start with the insanity defense. Although there's certainly no defending it, because it's not really a defense, it's just a statement of fact. So let's start off the review instead with what I'll call the insanity apocalypse. Beginning, where else? The gun-banning, Civil War-fostering excuse for a Virginia legislature is now poised to take guns away from anybody that doesn't know what the Constitution says in that Second Amendment. And they're chomping at the bit to get things rolling this week, but the real show looks like it may start Monday. But the insanity hardly stops there, because we have the continuing moves towards international war and, of course, economic meltdown, too. And arguably, since facts and logic don't matter anymore, in no particular order, here we go. From the Gateway Pundit, Jim Hoft, a piece entitled, Pure Unfiltered Crazy. Liz Warren, better known as Pocahontas. And this week, by the way, after that pitiful excuse for a debate, she wouldn't even shake Bolshevik Bernie's hand. Your host wouldn't either, but at least once upon a time, they were supposed to be comrades, weren't they? Anyway, the caught lying but not quite pure-blooded American Indian who wants to be king now says she's willing to ban construction of new homes. Anything that doesn't meet her standards for being carbon neutral. Oh, and while we're at it, why not ban all energy mining or drilling, too? That'll fix it. In other words, if the United States isn't dead before she takes office, and she doesn't inspire a civil war shortly thereafter, well, that'll fix it longer term for sure. By the way, just in case you're curious, this was an appearance on MSNBC, where else, and Morning Joe last week, where the Massachusetts nutcase talked about what's been called her Thunberg Light plan to eliminate climate change. While she's at it, she needs to re-engineer the sun. Oh, and since they don't know it's getting cooler rather than hotter, that's going to be tough. And maybe the solar cycle deniers need to recheck their mentor, too. Turns out that Greta Thunberg may not be, and I hope you're sitting down, folks, exactly the little nutcase girl she's been painted to be. Well, at least not without actual adult help. And unless you were the criminally negligent networks, including Time Magazine, obviously, you probably knew that. A Thursday evening software update at 2 Facebook, says Zero Hedge, accidentally allowed anyone to view exactly who is posting under the accounts of various high-profile public figures, businesses, and other entities, according to Wired. And here we go. The result, for starters, some 3 million followers of angry teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg have in fact been reading posts written by her father, Svante Thunberg, and a climate activist in India, who serves as a delegate to the UN's Climate Change Organization, named Adarsh Pratap. Now, let's be clear here, folks. Ghostwriters are obviously nothing new, but outright lying about them, especially if they're supposed to be child prodigies or something, probably should be frowned upon. They're still not coming clean. Denials flowed freely over the weekend, perhaps still being ghostwritten but not admitted. Who knows? And arguably, given the climate whoppers they keep getting away with, this is small potatoes by comparison. Thunberg Inc. claims that Greta, though, is still the one at least approving the content. No, who are we kidding? They're sticking with the big lie. I wrote it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Where Thunberg claims, of course, she writes the Facebook page personally, and at least Facebook managed to make sure that one didn't get signed by whoever really wrote it. Quote, all text posted on my Facebook page has, of course, been written by me, just like everything else. And at least she didn't have a public hissy fit over being exposed. Note Zero Hedge, well, the of course it's not me, you silly, kind of rings hollow because, at least by all outward appearances, her page was supposed to be hers alone, with no clue that she might have been getting help by page managers located in India or closer to home, whether it was her carbon-fueled yacht or her carbon-heated home. According to 2 Facebook, the flaw that allowed the truth to come out briefly was quickly fixed, but not before the people behind famous accounts were revealed and shared on public forums like 4chan. And this is funny, too. Quote, we quickly fixed an issue where someone could see who edited or published a post on behalf of a page when looking at its edit history, said the company in an official statement. We're grateful to the security researcher who alerted us to this issue. So let's make sure we understand exactly what's being revealed here, folks. Facebook will track and record and document and even manipulate everything you see and do on everything even associated with Facebook, whether it's on a cell phone or your home computer. Oh, and let's not forget the so-called personal assistants either. And you probably don't even know everything else that the app is tapped into or sharing via other socialist media platforms. But you're not allowed to see anything, especially the identity of those who are twisting and pushing their official narrative. Hopefully they got it fixed and the truth won't keep coming out. Lukasz Oleniak, independent privacy advisor at Oxford University Center for Technology and Global Affairs, said people who run sensitive pages for their own Facebook should now consider that their identity might be known. And while mistakes happen, this one at least was unexpected. And even then there, you've got to sift through the 80% to find the truth. People who run sensitive pages should now consider that their identity is already known by to Facebook. It's just that they might slip up and let it be revealed, at least briefly, to the peons.
The great Oz has spoken.
Oh!
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
And over the weekend, there was yet another slip-up, call it what you will, concerning the Pickering Nuclear Generating Station in Ontario, Canada. Courtesy of InfoWars.com, when an emergency bulletin was sent out about 7:20 a.m. Sunday morning, saying it applied to people within about 10 kilometers or 6 miles from the facility. But uh-oh, came the follow-up. We were just kidding. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain or to emergency announcements that might cost you your life if you missed them. Accidents happen. Think about that one, too. Well, actually, folks, that's not how they put it, but you already knew that. Important update, said the follow-up. The alert regarding Pickering Nuclear was sent in error. There is no danger to the public or environment. Unquote, and trust us, this time for sure. Speaking of trust us, but certainly without justification, there was more news out about the Federal Bureau of Instigation over the weekend. They got caught letting political hacks run so-called investigations into a duly elected president with the intent of fomenting an outright coup, which is still in progress. Their behavior for the last several years has lent new meaning to the criminal terms obstruction of justice and, of course, evidence tampering. The meaning, of course, is that it no longer applies to them or fellow traitors. And now there's this. FBI Director and, of course, Whoremeister du jour, Chris Wray, announced that in response to the FBI's having been caught committing all of these acts of treason, they are officially going to produce a new training video. Oh, and this time for sure, folks, they're serious. The seventh-floor sellout Wray released a statement on Friday saying, get this, the requirements referenced in paragraph above still apply to all FBI personnel who prepare FISA applications, and I have already re-emphasized the importance of strict compliance with them in a video I distributed to the entire FBI workforce via email on December 9th, 2019. This process, he noted, is laughably called a capital A corrective action. As Jim Hoft at the Gateway Pundit points out, and he's not alone, no one, of course, at the criminally evil, traitorous FBI will actually be disciplined for the criminal actions or even for having gotten caught and embarrassing their mob bosses. The Washington Examiner over the weekend revealed the identity of one more top FBI official who leaked secret information to the media to at least six different reporters. His identity was contained in a 21-page report obtained through a FOIA request, which revealed that investigators for the Department of Justice's Inspector General Michael Horowitz determined that one Brian Parman, age 53, the Deputy Assistant Director of the FBI's International Operations Division between 2016 and 2017, yeah, that's right during the planning for the coup, isn't it? Quote, improperly disclosed court-sealed and law enforcement-sensitive information to the media, unquote, in violation of FBI rules, which obviously don't mean a blankety-blanking thing, especially if the Constitution doesn't. But Parman defended his action, saying he gave 35 years of faithful and devoted service to this nation.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
And he denied ever giving classified or investigatively sensitive information to the press, in spite of what those silly IG people think. And let's cut to the chase, folks. The DOJ decided, of course, say it with me, not to prosecute Parman. And what do you bet he's still sucking at the public teat and drawing his entire pension, too? But wait, there's more. Kind of another slap in the face for Americans that still think the Constitution might have some bearing. From Christina Layla at the Gateway Pundit. The FISA court has now appointed a new replacement at the Department of Justice to review the FBI's bogus reforms. And guess where this slime bag comes from? The famous Obamacare sellout and much-compromised Chief Justice Roberts tapped one James Boasberg, Obama appointee, what else, to replace retiring FISA Judge Rosemary Collier, who's stepping down early due to health issues. I guess that's our cue to take another sip of Kool-Aid. And last Friday, no surprise here, Boasberg in turn announced an order that he has appointed another Obama-era scumbag from the Obama-era National Security SIC apparatus, David S. Criss, as amicus counsel to review the so-called reforms that the FBI is making to its FISA slam dunk looks like a warrant but really isn't process. Christina Layla is even kind enough to point out a few of the things that this deep state insider and cover-up compadre David Criss has been saying about this whole process where the FBI got caught. He, of course, calls the deep state coup a conspiracy theory and said the following. Here are my two big conclusions from the IG's report, as revealed in the 20-page executive summary, that on December the 9th. First, the report repudiates the claims of a coup. See, nothing to see here, move along, and any related deep state conspiracies in the FBI as advanced by President Trump and his supporters, unquote. And back on October 3rd of 2019, this paragon of unbiased judicial virtue tweeted the following about President Trump. Oh, and I'll say this up front. Hypocrisy of this magnitude pretty much marks him as the quintessential Obama appointee. Quote, America is now faced with a very stark choice. Do we want to be a country in which elected officials can use their governmental power to attack political opponents? No kidding. He actually said that. If not, it's pretty simple. Trump has to go. Unquote. And at least it's now obvious why he was picked, and also what you can expect from these reforms. Especially since it's clearly obvious to anybody who wants to do likewise that there are no penalties involved for gang-raping the Constitution, even if you eventually get caught. Especially if you can keep that coup going. Concludes Jim Hoft, presumably referring to the FBI, but at least by extension, the whole stinking deep state swamp. They really do want Americans to hate them. Well, for what it's worth anyway, there are at least a few in Congress that have had enough of the swamp chicanery. In the second half of an interview with Maria Bartiromo on Sunday, Congressman Devin Nunes was asked what he thought about the FISA court selecting that scumbag David Criss as an FBI surveillance and compliance monitor. And the issue's important, said Sundance at the conservative treehouse, because FISA reforms at the FBI and promises are essentially meaningless without some form of structural review process. And folks, they're even less meaningful if there are never any penalties for violating them and committing crimes. There are certainly, he says, substantive reasons to be concerned about this sellout, but first the general consensus opinion, courtesy of Fox News, which says the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court has stunned court watchers by selecting David Criss, former Obama admin lawyer who appeared on the Rachel Maddow show and has written extensively in support of the FBI's unconstitutional surveillance practices on the left-wing blog Lawfare, to oversee the FBI's implementation of their so-called reforms in the wake of that damning Department of Justice Inspector General report last year. Said Nunes, quote, of all the people in the swamp, this is the guy you come up with? Asked Nunes. The guy that was accusing me of federal crimes? The guy that was defending the dirty cops at the FBI? The court must be trying to abolish itself. There is long-term damage. Unquote. Even the president himself called the appointment of Criss a highly controversial one and slammed the decision. I gotta interject something here, folks. A highly controversial decision might be something like appointing Don Corleone or some other mob boss to be head of the FBI's mob enforcement division. This is pretty well beyond that. Because Corleone was fictional, after all, and at least with the mob, you kind of expect that kind of thing. I guess with the FBI, we're learning. But what Sundance then proceeds to do is go through the background of these various scumbags and point out just how truly overwhelming this deep six of any actual reforms is. There's an aspect, he writes, to the history of David Criss and Judge Boasberg that explains this selection. Doesn't justify it, mind you, but explains it. The conservative Treehouse first learned of Chris when researching who the government was using as amicus curiae for Fisk reviews. You see, there's a process, he points out, and David Chris has been one of those. He's worked to ameliorate Judge Boasberg before. And basically, to summarize about a page and a half of cover-up and legalese, it boils down to this. Who was the guy knee-deep in the cover-up before? Yep, David Chris. The back-and-forth government justification versus FISC argument within the data surveillance process was where we first saw Mr. Chris's name surface. It's Chris's job, he says later, to manufacture the judicial plausible deniability that the FISA judges need in order to keep allowing the Star Chamber FISA process to exist. Even before Chris was given this new Fisk assignment, it was already his job to manufacture process arguments, find obtuse angles to justify the procedures being used, and provide the FISA judges with the plausible deniability they need in order to keep rubber stamping Fourth Amendment violations. Yes, he says it's a scheme, a legal game of whack-a-mole. Every time the DOJ and FBI violate the Fourth Amendment, and every time they're caught, Chris comes into the picture as the fixer, with the job to keep the non-fixable, and I would put this word in here, anti-constitutional system going. How do we know, he says, these aren't earnest procedural processes being refined? Because the exact same violations are found year after year after year, and nothing is ever fixed. The judges point out the violations. The amici promises new process fixes. Wash, rinse, repeat, again and again and again, year after year. And now that they've really been caught trying to overturn an election, hey, we're going to go into high gear and rip off the gloves. And just to emphasize that point, Congressman Mark Meadows of North Carolina on Sunday joined Representative Nunes and all the others who can recognize a snake when they see it in the grass, demanding answers for why Obama-era DOJ official and swamp creature David Chris was appointed to oversee the so-called reforms. Quote, there need to be answers for why David Chris was picked to oversee FISA reforms. He's repeatedly downplayed blatant FISA abuse in the past and dismissed the damning IG's report findings. How can he fix a problem he doesn't even understand, he says, more than charitably. Completely unacceptable choice. And of course, that, folks, is the real point here. Concludes Sundance correctly for the conservative treehouse. It's been designed this way. What we need is to get the entire FISA 702 process stopped, and that includes using the FISA court against U.S. citizens. Why? Because as the Barry Sotero regime highlighted, it's a mass surveillance database being used to gather black ops and political opposition and surveillance against our elected officials. And that would be among others, I hasten to add. The entire FISA 702 process needs to be eliminated. If these three-letter criminal agencies want to turn a surveillance switch on against an American, let them go to a standard Title III judge and actually get a search warrant. Well, folks, that's certainly a wonderful comment, but given how the gang rape of the Bill of Rights only seems to be accelerating, and the president, among others, isn't doing anything to even slow it down, remember how the worst aspects of the Patriot Act were just reauthorized by a sellout, both wings of the evil bird of prey flapping in unison at Congress not too long ago? The better question remains, how much more will the formerly free American people put up with? All right, well, since we're already pretty well on the theme of FBI criminality and how it's getting rewarded as opposed to reformed, let's go to this piece from Aaron Klein at Breitbart. An email, what, another one from the criminal FBI? Yep, proves that disgraced FBI director and, of course, whoremeister extraordinaire James Comey personally approved the FBI effort to have the wild and unsubstantiated Golden Showers claim about President Trump included in material to be considered for publication in the U.S. intelligence community's SICK official report on alleged Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. Good grief, folks. It just keeps on coming, even if the waste stream won't talk about it. The Comey email, which has not received media attention until now when Breitbart finally is doing it, was revealed inside the Just Us Department's recently released 476-page IG report on the FBI's Russia, Russia, Russia collusion investigation. The IG report further discloses a separate email in which another scumbag on the seventh floor of the J. Edgar Hoover building, former deputy FBI whoremeister, later, of course, he sat Swamp Central and was finally fired, Andrew McCabe, Specifically, wanted dossier author Christopher Steele's unverified P charges against Trump to be included in the body of the January 6, 2017 U.S. Intelligence Community Report known as the ICA. And we've talked about this on this show, folks. McCabe opposed the CIA-instituted compromise to only reference the bogus Steele dossier in an appendix of the ICA report, while McCabe wanted it put right in the main body where it would get more attention. And now we know it was Comey who pushed along with him for the dossier's inclusion in the ICA material. Oh, and as of this morning, it's painfully obvious that not a one of these stinking traitorous slime bags is probably ever going to see the inside of a prison cell where they all ought to spend the rest of their lives, which says a whole lot about what's really going on in the Department of Just Us and who's still really running the swamp. Let me revisit Jim Hoff's conclusion to this entire matter again. They really, he says, want Americans to hate them. And I got to admit, they're doing a blankety-blankin' good job of it, too. Well, over the weekend, it finally came out that the Iranian regime was lying when they said they didn't shoot down that Ukrainian International Airlines Flight 752 taking off from Tehran. But oops, it was a mistake. They thought it might be American retaliation, so 176 people are dead. And here, folks, is the part that your host has to now admit really bugs me. Yeah, they got caught lying, a lot of people are dead, and guess what? Unlike the American intelligence community, they fessed up when they got caught and admitted it. You'd thought the Iranians would have said, hey, we've been learning from the DNC and the FBI for so long, maybe we thought we should do a training video and say, when you shoot down passenger planes, learn to lie better, like Americans do. I mean, really, shouldn't it bug us at least a little that the Ayatollahs, when they get caught, and their religion allows them to lie through their teeth anyway, actually fess up? Maybe they need a David Chris, or a James Comey, or a Robert Mueller, or a whole bunch of other people that we seem to have in abundance. Come to think of it, though, Brennan may already be a Muslim, and a whole bunch of Congress really does seem to be on the Iranian team, so maybe I'm just stating the obvious here. So I'll admit it, I'm frustrated and angry, have been for quite a while at the criminality that goes unpunished in America, and it just seems to get worse, but this is almost the icing on the cake, comes from Zero Hedge's summary of what's going on in Iran as people protest, ready for this, their criminal leadership. Despite an aggressive crackdown, it says, by the Iranian regime, kind of like the FBI, but maybe not quite as subtle, that reportedly included soldiers and riot police firing into crowds of civilians, in open defiance, too, of President Trump's warning to Tehran not to, quote, kill your protesters, anti-government protests, nevertheless, over Iran's mistaken shootdown of UIA Flight 752 continued on Monday for a third straight day, following the regime's admission of culpability on Saturday. And maybe now we see it. That's why Washington just keeps on lying. And you know what, folks? They're still lying, for example, about TWA Flight 800. During the protests, which erupted out of anger over the regime's initial lies about Flight 752, despite video evidence that kept emerging about how it was shot down, Iranian security forces fired both live ammunition and tear gas into crowds of angry demonstrators, who shouted protests about how they didn't like being dictated to or lied to. And they also shouted, they killed our geniuses and replaced them with clerics. In this case, it was a reference to the dozens of Iranian students who were returning to school in Canada that were aboard the gunned-down flight. One final quick story from the Daily Wire today as we start to wrap up about the U.S. Space Force, which has only been in operation just over a month, but is already seeing complaints from the usual suspects, like the so-called Military Religious Freedom Foundation, SICK, because they dared to hold a ceremony at the Washington National Cathedral to bless a King James Bible that will be used to swear in members of the Department of Defense's new Space Force, according to the Washington Examiner. And that, said the God-haters, was a, quote, shocking and repulsive display, yeah, of the most vile, exclusivist, fundamentalist Christian supremacy, and so on. Head Slimer Mickey Weinstein called it Christian privilege. Although, of course, once it was called the basis for the rule of law that made this country great. But when it comes to the insanity apocalypse, folks, we're just getting rolling, and we'll be right back. Color me red, white, and blue. Hello, hey. America's counting on you, and I'd rather die.
cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me.
Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And since it's been pretty obvious for a while that the rule of law is all but dead in post-constitutional America, I've really been focusing this week on some of the beyond incredible levels of hypocrisy that have followed in its wake. We're now way beyond coup plotters and traitors professing their love for the Constitution as they put a match to it. But in order to support that assertion, I'm going to have to go to some more stories. And let's start it off with this. Evidently, the Senate finally got around to calling the commie Congress's bluff, put up or shut up. If you're not going to submit the articles of impeachment, why'd you bother to pass them in spite of a lack of evidence, much less actual high crimes or misdemeanors? Finally, later on this week, the Speaker for the Traitors named the ringleaders as the circus moves to the Senate. Same perps, same show, new venue. But most of the news on that front can be summed up by this one story, which kind of illustrates what I was leading off this segment with anyway. We need to thank both Zero Hedge and, of course, C-SPAN for this brief nutcase Nancy Speaker for the Traitors quote. Yeah, you listen to it the first time, it shows that she really has evidently gone completely senile. But if you listen more carefully, and we will, there's an important admission here that cannot be overlooked. Basically, when it comes to impeachment witnesses, she said, and here comes the truth amidst the verbosity, it's not a question of proof, it's really all about the allegations.
It's not a question of saying what proof, it says what allegations have been made. And that has to be subjected to scrutiny as to how we go forward. But it should not be ignored. In the context of other events that have happened that would substantiate some of that.
Yeah, you heard that right. Probably creepy old quid pro Joe Biden is the only one who's far enough gone to really be able to follow discombobulation like that. But let's hear the admission one more time about how proof isn't really what matters. It's the allegations you need to pay attention to.
It's not a question of saying what proof. It says what allegations have been made.
Well, folks, there you go. And by that standard, I allege Nutcase Nancy is, by her own admission, a traitor, but at least she has mental incompetence to fall back on. Boundless hypocrisy that goes way beyond mere evil, however, is hardly limited to the commie Congress. Governor Blackface, Northam of Virginia, clearly vying for the title of most hated Bolshevik communist governor in the formerly free states of America, has declared a state of emergency there because, quote, armed militia groups, he says, plan to storm the Capitol, unquote. And his latest whopper refers to protests culminating on January 20th in what those who can still read the Constitution call Lobby Day. So, in yet another overreach, he calls an executive order, he's announced that he is banning all weapons from the Capitol for the day, except, of course, for the non-peons who are protecting him and his comrades. And I'll quote as much of the rest of this as I can stand. Said the traitor in blackface, credible intelligence gathered by Virginia's law enforcement, SICK, agencies indicates that tens of thousands of advocates, i.e. people who know what shall not means, plan to converge on Capitol Square for events culminating on January 20, 2020. Available information, he said, suggests that a substantial number of these demonstrators are expected to come from outside the Commonwealth, may be armed, and have as their purpose not peaceful assembly, but violence, rioting, and insurrection. And this, he said, constitutes an emergency, as described in Section 44-146.16 of the Code of Virginia. Interesting he can read that, but not the Virginia, or much less United States, constitutions. And this time he's banning not only guns, but also helmets, shields, and more. Well, of course, again, that applies just to the peons. His ban includes, quote, everything from sticks and bats to chains and projectiles. I suspect somehow that there might be a few Antifa folks that'll be allowed in, though, but color me skeptical. The list also includes firearms. It makes no sense, he said, to ban every other weapon, but allow firearms when intelligence shows that our militia groups plan to storm the Capitol, unquote. Or is it just possible, folks, that armed false flag groups
Funded by the likes of George Soros, the deep state, and who knows how many three-letter agencies, but arguably I repeat myself there, intend to be up to their usual tricks, and then again blame constitutionalists, Bible believers, and libertarians for it. Let me just put it this way. As I go through the news, be aware not only of the potential for false flags, because we've seen them before, but the motivation here, too, that makes them pretty close to a lead pipe cinch, if anything really does happen over the next week or so. And those gathering at these protests need to be very much aware of that, on their guard, and keep your video cameras and recorders handy, too. And by that, I also mean recorders that can't be remotely erased or blocked by cell purveyors, by those who pull the strings of the operating systems, like Apple and Android, i.e. Gulag. Let me say it again as clearly as I can. We are at a time when the potential for really nasty, dirty tricks, subterfuge, and outright Hitlerian kind of stuff, and media manipulation that would make Eichmann and Goering proud, cannot be ignored. Daisy Luther, the organic prepper, wrote the following. When you push a population to the brink, threatening them with gun confiscation at the hands of the National Guard, and telling them that their lawful actions of rebellion, their words, are meaningless, you have to expect the population to push back, particularly a rural, gun-loving population that makes up most of the counties in Virginia, and again, unlike today's dumbed-down snowflakes, can still actually read what the Bill of Rights still actually says. She goes on to ask who's sponsoring this rally and says it's interesting to note that throughout nearly every article from the Waystream media on this topic, you'll find multiple references to white nationalists, making it seem as though the event is being hosted by white supremacists instead of law-abiding gun owners who have no intention of kowtowing to unconstitutional mandates. It's particularly interesting, she continues, that it's Governor Northam making most of these references, given his part in the recent blackface scandal. Oh, and given the obvious fact, your host interjects here, that any honest politician would have long ago resigned in shame over, or, of course, been forced out by so-called progressives. She cites USA Today, which says, quote, Northam said the decision was a response to threats, some of them made online in forums hosted by hate groups and white nationalists. The governor, it continues, called on rally organizers to dissuade out-of-state groups from coming to the rally and encouraged a peaceful day for Virginians.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along.
National Propaganda Radio, NPR, said it this way, quote, Northam is raising concerns about a reprise of the deadly violence surrounding the white supremacist march on Charlottesville in August 2017, certainly cited by some of those who were there as another false flag. Back to the quote. He said state intelligence analysts, SICK, have identified threats and rhetoric online that mirrors the chatter they were picking up around that time, unquote. And I can't help but think, even if, as we've seen before, they manufactured and even encouraged some of it themselves. And finally, says Daisy Luther, this isn't the first tyrannical move we've seen in Virginia this week. An extremely popular Facebook post, well, until it gets deep-sixed, has been shared thousands of times already and says the following. So, Virginia introduces a bundle of radical laws to destroy Second Amendment rights, militias, sale, transfer, and registration bills, and the people of Virginia say no, and we're going to vote you all out next term. Virginia's so-called government responds by introducing a bill to eliminate voter ID. Virginia says we're not going to wait. We'll petition your removal from office and gets almost a third of the 240,000 signatures to remove the governor and starts petitions to remove delegates. Virginia government responds by introducing a bill to raise the number of signatures from 10% of the prevailing vote to 25%. Folks, it continues, this is a textbook example of tyranny. Quote, we're the government and we'll do anything we want, whether you like it or not. We won't let you vote us out. We won't let you remove us from office. And if you can't possess the weapons that a militia would need to force us out of office, there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. Unquote. And Daisy Luther obviously says, well, now we can add the executive order to the list of above-mentioned tyrannies.
As the week progressed, there were no shortage of warnings from the liberty-minded side of the web about the possibility, well, even the likelihood, of real nasty false flags being perpetrated on Monday, as Virginians rightfully concerned about Governor Blackface's attempt to force them to either be declared paper criminals or surrender their weapons, as the good Nazis under Hitler and good communists under Stalin demonstrated as a necessary prerequisite to the kind of wonderful gun control utopia that inevitably follows, along with the genocide. Anyway, a whole bunch of good Virginians who can read history and understand the consequences of what's being proposed there are rallying in Richmond on Monday to protest the end of the Bill of Rights and the beginning of something very, very different. And it's likely, folks, that we probably will see some kind of fireworks in Virginia on Monday. Matt Bracken is one of many warning about what he called the mother of all buffalo jumps, saying those who show up there are just plain asking for the false flag that the Bolsheviks will almost certainly try to deliver, even if they have to kill some of their own and blame the constitutionalists for the intended follow-up carnage. Harkening back not only to Charlottesville, he pointed to another example at the Twin Peaks restaurant in Waco, Texas, May 2015, where bikers in town for what they thought was going to be a peaceful rally found 9 of their own killed, at least 4 of them by police and their .223 caliber ammunition, and more than 20 critically wounded. Over 175 others were arrested that day, and all faced identical, basically bogus, felony charges. They were jailed for months, many financially bankrupted, although not one conviction was ever obtained, and all the charges were eventually dropped. While not one police officer, of course, was ever charged. Warns Bracken, anti-gun Virginia politicians and law enforcement brass, often aspiring politicos, won't pass up the golden opportunity to trash and ruin the statewide and national image of the Second Amendment movement. He believes Second Amendment supporters and antifas will be deliberately herded together in order to instigate telegenic brawls or worse and discredit the constitutional gun rights movement, as well as perhaps kick off the much ballyhooed and anticipated Civil War 2.0. Says Bracken, it won't matter ultimately who pulls the first gun or why or who fires first. It's the intent and the media spin that follows that will really matter. But for my part, folks, I'll say it again. Expect the very real possibility of a false flag. And keep your discernment filters set to maximum. So it's fitting then to return to the concept of hypocrisy writ large. Via next, a very familiar case in point, Ilhan Omar, who took it upon herself to blast pro-life Christians not long ago for, quote, trying to impose their views on society, what, by objecting to Big Brother-funded abortions, and guess who pays for that, in more than one way, obviously, while at the same time she not only imposes by force her views on them when it comes to unlimited abortion, but of course forces them to pay for it, too. Well, you wouldn't be surprised, now would you? We're getting used to that kind of thing. And yeah, I do hearken back to another one of those dead white guys that people like her hate so much, Thomas Jefferson, who of course said something to the effect that to compel a man to furnish contributions of money for the propagation of opinions which he disbelieves and abhors is sinful and tyrannical, unquote, and how much more then to pay for those very actions. Which leads me to this next story. They're pushing the envelope. From Tyler O'Neill via PJ Media, far-left activists, I would call them Bolsheviks, and I do, don't just want Americans to approve of all kinds of things they find sinful, tyrannical, and abhor, but also pay for them. The latest, Illinois has become the 20th state to force taxpayers to foot the bill for so-called transgender surgery. And the fact that they leave people infertile and scarred for life might be a reason for some of those people who are being forced into it to object, but it's all the more reason for those who choose to force them to revel in it. On December 23rd, he writes, Illinois joined 19, who could have believed it, other states and the District of Criminals to explicitly require Medicaid to pay for transgender surgeries. And don't let that fool you. Jefferson certainly wouldn't have been. Remember who's really paying for it. Whereupon the Department of Health Care, Sick, and Family Services, the state's primary Medicaid agency, published new administrative rules mandating the coverage of certain gender-affirming, how's that for a laugh, services, things like transsexual surgery that were once explicitly excluded from the taxpayer-mandated program. Said the communist governor, J.B. Pritzker, health care is a right, not a privilege. Achtung, und we will force you to pay for it. Und I'm committed to ensuring our LGBTQ community und all good Nazis or Illinoisians have access to that right, unquote, whether they like it or not. So yeah, Illinoisians, you don't have a right to defend yourself from the fascists. You don't have a right to keep and bear arms. You don't have a right to defend yourself on the streets of that cesspool. And you don't even have a right to say no to funding more of the same on so many levels. Here's a story the governor's probably quietly laughing about and celebrating, From Paul Joseph Watson at Summit News, a student who objected and then protested, how dare he, at a drag queen storytime event in Brisbane, Australia, subsequently was demonized mercilessly by the leftist media there and has finally committed suicide. In video of the event, 21-year-old Wilson Gavin can be seen shouting, "Drag queens are not for kids," at an Australian library. He and the protests were roundly condemned by the media, federal members of parliament, and a whole bunch of Australian celebrities, and faced continuing personal harassment and ridicule. They labeled him with names like bigot, and you can probably guess a whole bunch of others. And Monday, at least so far as the leftists are concerned, their campaign paid off, and he committed suicide. Or, who knows, could have been Arkansas, but that's probably the last we'll ever hear about it. So on to a story now that, I'll admit, really bugged me, right after I started thinking about it. Now, this story that I'm about to relate is certainly anecdotal evidence, but the problem is, it's not the first time, or the fifth time, or the 200th time I've seen stories like this about the so-called higher education system in America. Those very words now have become a sick joke, and those who use it to indoctrinate, my term, rather than educate. But what's interesting about this story is that it illustrates the degree to which the insanity has gone. And if you're holding any pointed objects, folks, please put them down before I start into this. It comes from campusreform.org and Jonathan McCormick about what is called a head inclusion officer. We'll come back to the irony of that idiotic title in a minute. At one Michigan State school of so-called higher education, he's in hot water, says the piece, but not fired, you'll note, after appearing outside a Trump rally holding a profane protest sign. All right, this took place back on December 18th when President Donald Trump held a rally in Battle Creek, Michigan, during which time Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer for Kellogg Community College in the area held up a sign saying, quote, "F*** Trump, F*** McConnell, F*** Graham," outside the Kellogg Arena where Trump was speaking. But that's not all. He then posted it on his Facebook page, and obviously Facebook didn't ban him for that. Because it's not, after all, like he was talking about Biden or even Bernie. Later, when he realized, hopefully, what an idiotic, asinine thing that was to do, especially for a so-called inclusion officer who prides himself on his ability to see alternative viewpoints. Well, we'll come back to that lie in just a second here. He removed the hypocritically offensive post and tried to delete all trace of it. But not before a whole bunch of people saw it, and several of them saved the copies. And arguably more importantly, some of them started asking questions like, what the hell does equity, diversity, and inclusion mean at an institution like this? When he was caught, he later acknowledged, saying the following, quote, "Recently I posted a picture on my page of me holding a sign at a rally to protest Trump's visit to Battle Creek," wrote Jorge Zaballos. "While I stand by my First Amendment right to express myself, the irony just literally drips off that whopper. I understand that my public and private actions have repercussions on the institution I work for, Kellogg Community College." And full stop, right there. Not the kind of repercussions that it should have. And here's the point. Chief Equity and Inclusion Officer, what a crock of a title even, for a publicly funded so-called institution of higher education? And this blithering idiot doesn't have the common decency to know when to keep his mouth shut, and is then shameless and, yeah, brainless enough to advertise just how much of a hypocritical joke his professional title is right there on his Facebook page? He's right up there with dirty cops who advertise on their Facebook page how they fix tickets, or maybe rape women motorists out there on a deserted roadside somewhere and post the pictures of that. But they're careful to take off their badge first, so their actions don't reflect poorly on the department. No, no, don't you dare imply that my over-the-top, idiotic, private hypocrisy could possibly reflect poorly on my ability to do a job that, if we actually didn't think what we were pushing was crap, wouldn't even exist to begin with. The very fact that they didn't fire this blankety-blank speaks volumes. If I had a kid there, I'd get them the blankety-blank out. And as for the people of Michigan and their tax dollars being appropriated to support fraud, well, I'll say it again. Ain't it a shame we no longer have a rule of law in this country? But because of this, said Zaballos, I deeply regret posting the picture on my Facebook page and the controversy it has generated.
Basically, I deeply regret that my hypocrisy has been so blatantly exposed. But the whoppers just keep on coming. Anyone I've interacted with, he said, knows that I strive to have, quote, respectful dialogue on some of the most challenging issues with anyone that holds a different opinion than mine. This incident doesn't change who I am and what I stand for. Whoa, time out. That may be the only really Clintonian truth he's spoken. 'Cause obviously, it hasn't. But back to the quote, what does he stand for? Creating a more equitable and inclusive society. Unquote. And how's that for shining a light on what the real truth is behind all of this verbal flatulence and prevarication? The Board of Trustees of the so-called college, which so far hasn't fired this sociopathic reprobate, issued a statement regarding his reprehensible conduct, saying the KCC employee in question was expressing his personal opinion on his own time, not acting on behalf of the college, unquote, even though his job is to be an inclusion officer, and this does kind of demonstrate what a big whopping lie that very title is. Time to cut to a quick aside with the only conservative student, who did, of course, ask to remain anonymous, that campus reform seemed to find, quote, I've yet to come across another conservative student, was the way this one put it. I'm sure they likely exist there, though, probably a minority, but must remain hidden or face certain reprisal from a system that seemingly only values liberal thought, unquote. Said the author, this past year, faculty and staff were required to attend several mandatory diversity training sessions led by Zeballos that were described by some as simply hating whitey. But the shameless institution wasn't done doubling down yet. Listen to this whopper. KCC is a politically neutral, oh really, tax-funded institution of higher learning and does not side with any political party or campaign message. No, we just hire people who make it really, really clear exactly where we stand. The school called the situation, says the piece, a teachable moment and a healthy reminder that individual actions can reflect poorly on the school. Well, folks, obviously the moment hasn't been nearly teachable enough yet, because this Orwellian joke is still in the business of warping minds. But the story demonstrates the real truth here. The reason it's not bankrupt and isn't likely to be is because it's a leech, a parasite, sucking at the public teat. And while they may talk about social justice, harumph, or even social responsibility, there's no real responsibility of any kind being demonstrated here. Local community leaders that are named in the piece told Campus Reform that basically I'm a taxpaying citizen of Battle Creek and was directed to Jorge Zeballos' publicly available Facebook page, and I had deep concerns over the you-know-what that I found there. And I was even more disturbed, it continued, to find that some of the members of KCC's board, who are friends on Facebook with Mr. Zeballos, hadn't even pressured him to remove the post. Somehow, folks, I doubt that this particular institution of higher education still teaches Jonathan Swift, but he did say something very apropos, quote, I never wonder to see men wicked, but I often wonder to see them not ashamed. I suspect he'd be way beyond wonder today. And probably the most salient response that came from the locals was this, and it goes to the heart of why this story goes so far now beyond merely anecdotal. Mr. Zeballos has violated, quote, the very goals that are listed on the so-called, I put that in there, equity and inclusion page of the KCC website. His behavior does not foster or promote civility in any way, and certainly does not advance dialogue. But it does, folks, speak volumes about what so many institutions of so-called higher learning really mean when they talk about equity, civility, and inclusiveness. Especially when you compare it to even anecdotal evidence of just how many students have been expelled for merely liking conservative comments on Facebook. Answer, if you've ever read the Constitution or believe in the Bible, it doesn't apply to you any more than the codes of conduct apply to those who ram them down other people's throats but don't pay any attention to them in their own personal, private, or public lives. I'll close with this. The college pledged a commitment to, quote, create an inclusive environment where we foster respect for others and our differences, support cultural understanding, demonstrate ethical behavior, and champion social justice, unquote. And, hey, there's only one way to close this piece out.
That's my story. Oh, that's my story. Well, I ain't
story and I'm sticking to it.